Okay, thanks for the invitation. I'm going to be telling you about a couple of papers, summer, early fall, with Finn Larson. So the general background is that over the past couple of years, there's been a lot of progress in understanding black hole entropy, microscopically, macroscopically, with improved accuracy, going beyond the leading order computations. So in particular, both on the microscopic and macroscopic sides, we can derive corrections to the Bekenstein-Hawking area law, various power law corrections in the charges, if you consider a black hole. And this has been a very active subject. Many people have worked on this. This is an incomplete list. And there are also interesting results, even the case where these corrections are actually not small corrections, but large corrections, in the sense that if the area of the original black hole is zero, so the Bekenstein-Hawking formula would give zero, nevertheless, we know there's a microscopic degeneracy, and by including these extra corrections, we can account for these things. So this is crucially using various stringy effects, alpha prime corrections, G-string effects, and it's certainly very encouraging that we can begin to understand those effects quantitatively, in the sense that most of us probably believe that a resolution of the black hole information paradox will involve inherently stringy effects, and so it's crucial to have those under control, and that's being developed in this work. Now, there's also an interesting connection to the topological string via this conjecture of Aguri, Strominger, and Botha. I'll say a little bit about that as we go along. So there are these nice agreements, but when you first see these things, they're rather mysterious. In particular, one takes into account a certain set of higher derivative terms in the supergravity action and matches those to the microscopic degeneracies. But these higher derivative terms are not being included in a systematic way. It's a very particular subclass of higher derivative terms that are being included. Nevertheless, one seems to get agreement, and the question is why, in particular, if one looks at one of the terms that one doesn't include and looks at its contribution to the entropy, it would seem to contribute to the same order one is working at, so screw up the agreement. Okay, so sometimes one hears arguments for this based on supersymmetry or maybe one index or something like that. I'd like to argue that the reason things are working is basically due to exact statements that we can make about anomalies, particularly gravitational anomalies will play a key role. And I'm also going to use the fact that there's an underlying ADS3 geometries in these black holes that have been considered. Okay, so once I give this anomaly-based derivation, this will both lead to a streamlined derivation of these corrections and allow us to generalize them in the sense that we can compute these corrections even for non-BPS black holes. And so a particular example will be the heterotic string, so the entropy of the heterotic string with both left movers and right movers excited, so therefore a non-BPS system that will follow from these anomaly-based arguments. Four-dimensional black holes, that's right. There's a near-horizon ADS3, that's right. Okay, so here's a little overview of the rest of the talk. I'll sort of spiral in on the main results. I'm going to begin with some general comments on comparisons between microscopic entropies and macroscopic entropies. Then I'll turn to a discussion of black hole entropy from the microscopic side and some general higher derivative theory, not necessarily coming from string theory or supersymmetry, just some general comments we can make. Then we'll apply these ideas to string theory and use gravitational anomalies. I'll give some concrete examples. And at the end, discuss some more general aspects of holography in the presence of gravitational anomalies. Okay, so most of this talk is going to be about the macroscopic side, about computing the black hole entropy, but I'd like to begin with discussion of the microscopic countings and general features. So the usual situation that we're all used to is we consider some bound state, BPS bound state of brains of some sort, and we'd like to know the degeneracy of that system. And typically what we do is we can work at in the low energy world volume CFT description. So we want to do some counting of the world volume CFT. And so when we do that, it's crucial to distinguish two kinds of charges that are carried by this BPS system of brains. So there are the things that I call the heavy charges, P, that define what the CFT is. So for example, in the D1D5P system, the D1 and D5 tell you what the CFT is. And the P, the momentum, would arise in excitation in that CFT. So I'm going to call those things light charges. Heavy charges tell you what the CFT is. Light charges are excitations in that CFT. Okay, so given that description, the natural thing you'd like to do is then work out a partition function of your CFT, sum over all states, and we would weight the states by some potential coupled to the light charges. Sum over all states of the system, the degeneracy is a function of the heavy charges and the light charges weighted by this potential. That gives us a partition function. This is the so-called mixed partition function. It's defined by Gori, Strominger, and Vafa, but I want to emphasize here, this is just the natural thing given this distinction between two types of charges. Could be. I'm using P and Q because in the context of four-dimensional black holes, they end up being electric, magnetic. But, for example, D1, D5P, light charge and momentum, heavy charge in D1, D5, so these are not electromagnetic. So it depends on the context. But my notation is sort of designed to agree with some of the things in the literature.
Is Q positive?
Sir? Is Q positive? Well, yeah, so if we're looking at some, that's right, so the standard thing would be look at some, you know, chiral half of the CFT and look at, you know, positive momentum in that half. That's sort of the standard situation. So it'd be like P left or something. P left starts from, you know, zero.
Omega would vanish to low PPM.
Well, this thing is, I mean, this thing is something over all states, so it's non-vanishing. Yeah, this thing here, I'm counting everything. This is counting all states. So I'm not going to just count every BPS states. Oh, we could restrict to BPS states if we want to, but here I'm defining this as completely generally counting over all states. Okay, so this is basically just some general, you know, thermodynamic partition function. Okay, so of course we could try to invert this relation to recover the degeneracies of function of charges in terms of the partition function. That would be some inverse Laplace transform. Okay, so I don't know if we can see what's down here, but hopefully. So as I said, I'm not going to really talk too much about the microscopic side of things, but let me just sort of quote the result that we want to get. So the canonical example here will be M5 rings wrapped on Calabi-Yau. There's some low energy 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT associated with that. And that CFT is governed by the P's are the wrapping numbers of M5 brains. The potentials phi I are potentials for M2 brains. And phi zero is this potential dual to momentum. So you wrap the 5 brain, you get a string, and momentum moving in a string. Phi zero is potential dual to the string. So if you want to account for these corrections of this form, this is not the whole story. There are exponentially small corrections in the entropy as well. But if you want to account for that part of the entropy, it suffices to look at this contribution to the partition function. Okay, so there's extra dot dot dots here, but the dot dot dots are suppressed when this phi naught becomes very small. And so to get those power law corrections, the question is whether you can reproduce this microscopic partition function from the gravity point of view.
And small and P large.
And P large, that's right.
The effective topological string coupling is lambda equals 4 pi I over phi naught. If phi naught is 0, that could not a problem if at the same time the scalar factor.
Okay, so it's important to notice here that these terms are both scaling like 1 over phi naught. Okay, that's going to be important for what I use. This is going to tell us what parts of the supergravity action we need in order to reproduce this microscopic counting. Okay, now that's the microscopic side. Now let me turn to the macroscopic side, the gravity side, the black hole. And so what's nice about phrasing things in terms of that mixed partition function is that aligns us perfectly with what we usually compute in ADS CFT. So it's naturally set up to agree with the bulk computation ADS CFT. So given that, the general class of things I'm going to be considering, geometries are going to have an ADS 3 factor, some sphere factor, and some compact manifold. In that M5 brain case, wrapped in Calabi-Yau, this would be ADS 3 cross S2 cross CY3. Now, in the subject, most of the papers in the subject deal with ADS 2 black holes. And what is the relation between these things? Well, they're the same geometries. But if you have an ADS3 black hole and you Kaluza-Klein reduce it along the horizon direction, it becomes ADS2. So those ADS2 black holes are just the dimensional reduction of ADS3 black holes. And what I'm claiming is the ADS3 picture is actually more powerful. Let's just use the symmetries of 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT. That's right. And the black rings also have an ADS3 structure. Yeah, so ADS3, actually the only case, as far as I know, the only case where we really understand in full quantitative detail black hole entropy and string theory is for black holes with an ADS3 factor. Okay, there's a counterexample, but I'm not aware of it. The hard part is getting the dual to ADS2. The hard part is getting a dual quantum mechanics to ADS2.
Yeah.
But
so
the dual CFT. Why would you want to dimensionally reduce?
Why don't you just dimensionally reduce?
Well, because in ADS3 I know the CFT. In ADS2 I don't know the.
I don't know the.
The horizon. So you have to look at a black hole there,
yeah,
and reduce along the horizon direction. So you have to be a finite size black hole to reduce, clearly. And then you'll get the ADS2 picture. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward to see that just from explicit geometries. But so the ADS3, so it's an equivalent picture, but the symmetries are more manifest in the ADS3 description. You have the full both of your Soros there.
Maybe the question is, why isn't the quantum mechanics
always just a dimensional reduction of circle of the CFT? Yeah, I'm not sure that it isn't. Has this been, so I know Strominger and company have a proposal for this quantum mechanics, which is some quiver of quantum mechanics. Superficially, that indeed doesn't look like. Yeah, well, I mean, this is, what can I say? If you don't think, you just take this geometry, write it down, you'll see an ADS3 factor, use ADS-CFT, there's 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT.
So if we take the 5-ring and wrap it around a 4-5-1 Calabi-Yau,
that geometry is ADS3 plus S2 plus Calabi-Yau on your horizon.
So I know it'd be four-dimensional black holes can be lifted up to five-dimensional black strings, and then it's easier to see that the near horizon geometry is the ADS3 factor. But that I've always thought of in the asymptotically flat context, where the circles become finite size. If you really stick to the near horizon geometry, the circle that you're including upon reducing is very big in ADS3, a large radius.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't cause any complication. You still get ADS2.
Right, I know what you're saying. So the state, well, so you have to change the identifications a bit, okay? So the ADS3 black hole, the question is right whether you reduce on that big circle or reduce on a circle that's becoming asymptotically null in ADS3. Okay, so in fact, this relationship between ADS2 black holes and ADS3 black holes, the geometry is, if you just lift the ADS2, you get a locally ADS3 geometry. The identifications can be a bit different in that local geometry than the standard situation. So you have to change that in order to avoid the problem you're talking about. But that doesn't change the geometry of the horizon. So in terms of the entropy counting, that's really a separate issue. The horizon stays unfixed. I'm doing something off at infinity. Okay, hopefully this will, I'll give examples as we go along, hopefully make this a bit more clear. In any case, when we have this ADS3 factor, then, of course, we have ADS-CFT correspondence, and we'll write down this ADS partition function. In the gravity picture, these heavy charges, P, are the things that set the size of the ADS, they set the size of the sphere, they're setting the geometry, and these potentials, I introduce a potential partition function by adding something to Lagrangian. So by ADS-CFT, we know those potentials are just boundary conditions for some supergravity fields, just applying the ADS-CFT correspondence. So this mixed partition function is just a natural thing you'd compute in ADS-CFT, nothing unusual. So how would I compute this partition function? So I've given you boundary conditions, and I should, in principle, sum over all geometries with those boundary conditions, sort of think about that as some of all semi-classical geometries and then performing some path integral of all fluctuations around those geometries. These fluctuations include massive and massless string modes, string, brain, instantons, everything. This is clearly going to be too hard. We can't do this. But in fact, the key thing is that those terms I wanted to reproduce on the microscopic side, all scaling is 1 over phi naught, implies when we go through the analysis here that we only need to keep local contributions to the partition function, in the sense that if I just hand you some local supergravity action, including all higher derivative terms, so meaning all integration out of all the massive string modes, that's enough to get the partition function of the aggregate I need. So the extra terms that I'm not including, summing over geometry, summing over instantons, winding around this non-contractible circle, they're higher order. That's the key thing that makes this work. And basically the key point is that since things are coming from local supergravity action, I can argue that's determined by symmetries and anomalies. Symmetries and anomalies don't necessarily constrain the parts I'm not looking at, the non-local stuff. Okay, so on this topological string side that's gotten a lot of attention, what does that do? Well, the topological string captures some particular subclass of higher derivative terms, basically R squared terms with factors of the gravifoton completed by supersymmetry. And it's known from starting with the work of DeWitt and collaborators and other examples since then, when including these terms, working out a corrected geometry, working out the black hole entropy, does give agreement with the microscopic counting. Now, as I said, this is, at first hearing, this is very confusing because this does not include terms that we know that are there, such as an R to the fourth term. And you can just say, just take and give an R to the fourth term, look at its contribution to the entropy, you'll find that it corrects things the same order as you're working at, so it seems to spoil the agreement. So what is going on? Well, as I just said, what's going on is the local part of the partition function is governed by symmetries and anomalies. The topological string gets those right. Okay, so it has the right symmetries, it'll capture the anomaly, the gravitational anomalies, and so it has to give the right answer. So all these extra contributions that are not included have to cancel out by symmetry. Okay, so it's like a non-renormalization theorem. Again, this is I think only clear if you use this ADS3 picture, I would claim. Okay, so the analysis, this is just an overview. The analysis I'm going to use is going to use supersymmetry. I'm going to use supersymmetry as the underlying theory, but then I can apply the results to non-supersymmetric black holes in these theories. That'll allow me to apply things to non-BPS systems. Okay, now I'm going to step back a bit and talk about general issues involving computing black hole entropy in a general higher derivative gravity theory with an ADS3 factor. For now, putting aside the connection to string theory or supersymmetry, just trying to be as general as possible and see how far we can go. So I'll focus on cases of an ADS3 factor, some sphere, some compact X. As I said, this is motivated by this canonical example of M theory on CY3 with M5 brains and M2 brains. And this example is related to interesting cases by duality, heterotic string on T5, D1, D5, and T4 process 1, K3 process 1. Okay, but so I start with some general diffeomorphism invariant theory that admits this background as a solution. Right off the bat, I'm just going to reduce on X, reduce down to a P plus three-dimensional action, and write that general action in this form. This is some general diffeomorphism invariant bulk Lagrangian with all higher derivatives. We need some boundary terms to make this whole action finite, with a well-defined durational principle, and so on. And there may be some Chern-Simons terms, which I have to sort of put aside and deal with separately for reasons that hopefully have been clear. Okay, so I assume that this action admits a solution of the form ADS3 cross sphere, and that there exists a solution that preserves all the symmetry. So there exists a solution where all diffeomorphism invariant, gauge invariant quantities are constant. So all, F squared, things like that, all constant over the solution. This will differ from the black hole, but I'm assuming this exists as a solution. Okay, so I have this Lagrangian, and assuming this is a solution, so I'd like to know how to figure out the radii. What is the size of the ADS? What is the size of the sphere? Okay, so how do we do that? Well, by the equations of motion, of course, the action should be stationary with respect to local variations of those radii. So let me look at a local variation of either the sphere radius or the ADS radius. There'll be one term just from the ordinary derivative of the Lagrangian, and then with all the derivatives in the theory, after integrating by parts, I'll get covariant derivatives of stuff times delta L. But all these terms just vanish by the assumption that everything is covariantly constant. So in fact, the radii are just determined by extremizing this term. could there be boundary contributions? I'm looking at some local contribution. Yeah, we don't have to look at some. It's a local. So I'm assume a solution of this form, and do a little local variation.
L is a constant or a function of f?
I'm assuming a solution exists where L's are constant. I'm going to look at a local variation around that assumed solution, a local variation of L around that assumed solution, using the fact that it actually has to be stationary for such a variation. Okay, so we know then this whole local variation, all that ends up contributing is this ordinary derivative square root of g times Lagrangian. This factor here is square root of g. This is Lagrangian. So this factor should be stationary. So if you want to find the radii, just extremize this thing. I'm going to multiply by this constant, because if I multiply by the constant, the interpretation of the thing I'm extremizing will end up being the central charge of the conformal field theory dual to this ADS3. Okay, so how do you see that? How do you see this as the central charge? Let's write ADS3 in coordinates such that the boundary is a two-sphere, round two-sphere. To work out the supergravity action, is divergent because of the eta goes out to infinity, divergence in the eta integral. If you work that out, you'll find that it scales linearly in some cutoff on that eta integral, this prefactor. What does this mean? Well, this scaling with a cutoff is just the scaling logarithmic divergence of the theory with the conformal anomaly. Changing eta is just scale transformation of the boundary. So if you think of this as a conformal field theory on S2, you have the usual conformal anomaly. That conformal anomaly, of course, tells us how the action scales under change of the cutoff and change of the conformal factor. And so just by equating this delta I with this delta I, you'll see that C ends up being the factor that I've written down here. Okay, so this is just sort of using analogy with conformal field theory, but it's with the boundary conformal field theory, but from this Brown-Hanault point of view where we have a CFT for any ADS3 gravity theory, this is the result. So what's nice here is you can then get the central charge by an extremization principle. Write down this function, extremize it, extremal value is the true central charge.
So L V plus 3 is just some constant independent of the Lagrangian. Clearly L V plus 3 is the box
thing. Yeah, that's right. So all the
constant and a divergent constant.
No, so I mean, L's are only appearing here. This is the only place where the L's appear. And so in the Lagrangian itself, the Lagrangian itself here has no L dependence.
That's the Lagrangian.
Sorry, I'm not saying that. Sorry, I'm saying that perfect. Lagrangian does depend on L, of course, because...
curly L.
Yeah, curly...
L's
yeah. Sorry, curly L's do depend on the little L's. That's right. Yeah. Yes, sir. We don't know much about what the explicit form is, but whatever it is, just plug into here and extremize. That'll be the central charge. Okay. Okay. So we have the central charge given by that formula. What do we do with the central charge? Well, we can use it to compute black hole entropy of BTZ black holes in particular, and entropy in this general theory. So I'm going to use this relation between the BTZ black hole and thermal ABS. So the BTZ black hole, the Euclidean BTZ black hole, I want to compute the partition function of the Euclidean BTZ black hole. It is a solid torus. Okay, a solid torus, the boundary is this two-dimensional torus. Phi is the direction around the horizon, that's non-contractible. And Euclidean time t, split here, is contractible. On the other hand, if you look at thermal ABS is just ADS in global coordinates with imaginary time identified. That's so in that case, the imaginary time is non-contractible, and of course the angular direction of global ADS is contractible. These two geometries are related by modular transformation of this boundary torus. Okay, or I can do a more general SL2Z transformation and get a general family of black holes. Okay, so that's a useful relation. It's going to allow me to compute the partition function of the black hole. So let me start with a warm-up example. So in general, our BTZ black hole always has mass and angular momentum. In general, it will carry conserved electric charges due to whatever gauge fields I have in theory. But just as a warm-up, let me only consider a black hole carrying mass and angular momentum, no other charges. Okay, so I want to compute the partition function. I want to compute the action of the BTZ black hole. So the easiest way to think about this is think about the partition function sort of in the usual CFT language. So I can relate the action of the black hole to Virasoro generators as follows. Okay, so here's one key part of the argument. Let's look at the thermal ADS. If I just consider the local part of the supergravity action, then thermal ADS is essentially the same thing as global ADS, but with a finite time duration. So I consider all, you know, instantons and so forth, those things could wind around the non-contractible time direction. That would make things more complicated. But if I'm only considering the local contributions, then I just have global ADS with some finite time duration. Now, global ADS has, it's the, you know, NS vacuum, so it has L zeros equal to zero. And so that still holds in this case. So the action of thermal ADS is just given by putting L0 and L0 tilde into here, equating that with I. That's the action of thermal ADS. Then I do the modular transformation, gives me the action of the BTZ black hole. And the key thing is here, the action of the BTZ black hole is now entirely determined by the central charges. Okay? So all the, this is for a general BTZ black hole and a general higher derivative theory. All the higher derivative information is packaged into these central charges as determined by the C extremization principle. Okay, if I wanted to compute the entropy, I could transform partition function back into degeneracies. Tau is related to the temperature and chemical potential like that. Let me, for right now, just do saddle point evaluation. If I do saddle point evaluation of this integral, then I get the Cardy formula. Okay, so now the Cardy formula is sort of standard formulas context. Why does it arise? Well, we're familiar with it in CFT, but the route I got went through here to get the Cardy formula is exactly the same route you do in CFT, so it's not surprising I get the same formula. But, well, from the gravitational point of view, it's sort of interesting. So normally, in sort of two derivative gravity, this is just some suggestive rewriting of basically S equals A over 4. But now, we have all this higher derivative information in C and C tilde. This has, a priori, nothing to do with the area of the event horizon of the black hole. So, in general, as I said, this is the entropy of the BTC black hole in this arbitrary theory, and it encodes deviations from A over 4. And, you know, we all know in higher derivative theory, A over 4 couldn't be the general answer. I mean, what we mean by the metric is subject to field redefinition ambiguities and so forth. So, like, S equals A over 4 couldn't be a universal formula, but the Cardy formula is the thing that's universal. Okay, now, we also have Wald's formula. So Wald has given an alternative formula for entropy and some general higher derivative gravity theory. It involves taking the functional derivative of Lagrangian with respect to the Riemann tensor, treating the Riemann tensor as an independent variable, and you integrate this over the horizon. And of course, it's natural to ask, how does this Wald's formula relate to what I just derived? So we can see the relation. If we use the fact that we derived the Cardy formula by this C extremization principle, so you can replace C by something involving derivatives of C because it's extremized, use some dimensional analysis, trade derivatives and so forth, and so you can write C in this form as the derivative of Lagrangian with respect to Ricci tensor. And once you've done this, a little bit more work in processing gets you back to this form. So in fact, this Cardy formula for the entropy is exactly equivalent to Wald's entropy formula. In fact, the Cardy formula that I derived is actually slightly more general in the sense that this is actually true when you have independent C's and C tildes, whereas Wald's formula actually only applies for C equals C tilde. Okay, this result was actually, the fact that the Wald formula and the Cardy formula equivalent was actually known earlier by these people.
So this optimization,
it's saddle point, actually, in general. It's usually maximized vector one of the L's and minimized vector the other one. Okay, so that was the warm-up. Now, what are the complications if you consider additional charges? So in the case of the string theory examples, we want to have additional charges, additional potentials. That's important. So in our ADS3 theory, we'll have some additional gauge fields. And so I could write down Maxwell kinetic term for these gauge fields. It could be other higher derivative kinetic terms as well. That's not important. But crucially, there's a Chern-Simons term for these gauge fields. CIJs in the string theory examples are related to the intersection numbers of the Clavijau. And if you have a Chern-Simons term in ADS3, you need to add a boundary term of this form in order to get a well-defined variational principle. And one way to sort of think about that is in the CFTs dual to these systems, the currents, the boundary currents are chiral. And if you want to project out the other chirality, you need a boundary term to set that current to zero. And so there's some, I haven't written out coefficients, but there's some particular coefficient in front of this boundary term in order to get a chiral current. Okay, so we want to, according to this partition function, we want to turn on boundary conditions for these potentials. I can do that just with a flat connection. That's the simplest thing. Turn on flat connection. That flat connection will induce a charge due to the Chern-Simons term. There'll be a charge integrated over the boundary. And another important fact is the boundary term that I had to add here, there's a star there, so this means it depends on the metric. It depends on the metric. When I vary with respect to the metric to derive the stress tensor, I get a contribution. So this boundary term will shift the stress tensor, shift the Virasoro generators in that form. It's slightly schematic here. And so basically, you do redo the previous analysis. The only change that you would add on to the L0 is this term. And this is the action I had before. Basically, you just add on this extra term, and it's a very simple modification. So adding these extra potentials is really, not much of a complication. Well, it's because, going back to here, so everything's proportional on the thermal side, everything's proportional to tau. And then I did the modular transformation, everything became 1 over tau. So, when I said, it's from the action, but everything's proportional to the duration of Euclidean time. Why? Sorry, I'm not quite understanding.
So, in the thermal case, you want tau CIVAI.
Well, because the whole action is.
No, but you've got these A's that are integrated
over the spatial boundary, that's right.
So what you're saying is that the angle of CIJ, AI, star AJ, tau.
Right, that's right.
AI, AJ,
the AI. Yeah, I prefer to think.
Something
Yeah, I prefer to think of everything in terms of just the shift in L0. And then you have some tau multiplying whatever the L0 thing is. So that there'll be cancellation if you do the other direction. Okay, so a little bit of relabeling. This tau is basically the same thing I was calling phi 0 before. These A's, the potential, is what I was calling phi I before. And if we look at that result now, specialized to extremal black hole, so it's at one of the temperatures of the left moves, right moves to zero, then you reproduce this result we wanted with CFT, provided the central charge from the extremization principle ends up being this factor here. So this factor is accounted for. All you have to do is show that the central charge is given by this, and then you'll reproduce the microscopic partition function. Okay, So the summary is here, everything to do with the black hole entropy has been reduced down to computing the central charge C tilde. Okay, everything has been reduced down to that computation. Okay, so now concrete example of this. So again, the canonical example, M theory on CY3. Let me just start with the two derivative case, and then we'll talk about higher derivatives. So as you reduce M theory on Calabi-Yau 3, you get five-dimensional supergravity action, Einstein-Hilbert, kinetic terms of the moduli, Maxwell, Chern-Simons. This kind of theory has been very heavily studied in recent years. We basically know all about the solutions of these theories. And one writes the metric in the so-called terms of this base metric, DSB, this four-dimensional hyperkähler space and some vibration over it. And there are some nice equations BPS equations reduced down to these nice equations. And it's pretty straightforward to solve these equations in terms of harmonic functions. And in this context, so you get four sets of harmonic functions. One set tells you how many M5 brains you're wrapping at four cycles. Second set tells you how many M2 brains you're wrapping at two cycles. Then you can have Kaluza-Klein monopoles. If you take this base metric to be some Gibbons-Hawking space and some momentum. This is, again, Gibbons-Hawking space. Or if you have some circle direction in this base metric, then you get momentum moving around the circle. Get a harmonic function for that. So I'm not going to write down the explicit solutions, but there's just a cranky term to write down any charges and solve those equations. Okay, now in terms of the 2A description, this would be some general D0, D2, D4, D6 momentum black hole. This is sort of the description that people normally give in the literature, but I'm thinking of this from the M-theory point of view. Okay, let me simplify life by not including these Kaluza Klein monopoles or these six brains from this 2A point of view. So work out that geometry. You'll find locally that you get ADS3 plus S2 cross CY3, the kind of example that I wanted to consider. Okay, so we have the heavy charges and the light charges in this case. The heavy charges are the M5 brains. They tell you what the size of the ADS3 is, what the size of the S2 is, and what the fixed attractor values of the moduli are. It's driven by integrating the fluxes over two cycles. And then once you've chosen those heavy charges, it's a completely straightforward exercise to do the C-extremization principle. Just take that action, extremize it, work out the central charge, and you'll find this result for the central charge, something cubic in the M5 brain charges. Okay, and note that this then is this leading term that I wanted for the central charge. What this leaves then is this correction term in the central charge. Okay. Okay, well, we know essentially from the microscopic description that this is a theory with 4,0 superconformal symmetry. Wrapping M5 brains on the Clavijan that way gives that much supersymmetry. Now, if I wanted to go to compute, so I just did the two derivative supergravity at this point. If I wanted to compute corrections of this thing, according to C-extremization, I would need to know the entire Lagrangian. I have to extremize the entire Lagrangian to get C. And, well, we certainly don't know the entire Lagrangian, all higher derivatives. And so this is not helpful at this point. So we need another approach to get the corrections. And let me sketch the logic here of this other approach. So this is where the anomalies are going to come in. So as I said, at this two derivative order, we showed that we have this ADS3 cross S2 cross X theory background with 4,0 symmetry. Now, whatever higher derivatives exist in the theory, I'm going to assume that those higher derivatives don't destroy this solution in the sense that we still have a solution of this form with the symmetry. It may rescale the ADSs, may rescale the S2, rescale the central charges, and so forth, but it doesn't remove that basic solution from the theory. Okay, I can't prove this because I don't know the action, but this is not true. It would be some breakdown of ADS CFT because we have the microscopic side of banging those symmetries, and so we should have from bulk point of view. Okay, so now we can use this important observation of Harvey, Minozzi, and Moore, that in this theory, symmetries relate the central charges to M5 brain gravitational anomalies. Okay, and so that's why we can actually make exact statements about central charges in this theory. So how does that work? Well, if I have four supercharges, I have an SU2R symmetry, and the central charge is related to the SU2R symmetry anomaly. Furthermore, the difference, so that tells me the central charge is this side. The difference between the two central charges, C minus C tilde, is given by gravitational anomaly. If you have a CFT with unequal left and right central charges, there's an anomaly if you couple that to dynamical gravity. And so that's under control. And from the bulk point of view, both of these anomalies are given by a single R squared Chern-Simons term, some single term in five dimensions which controls both of these anomalies. So the claim is that everything about the central charges can boil down to knowing a single term in the action, a single higher derivative term in the action, which the topological string happens to include. But you don't need the whole thing, you just need this one term. Okay, so the reason why things are working in the topological string gets that right. All these individual R to the fourth terms, which could correct the central, could individually correct the central charge, but the complete set, consistent with the symmetries, will have to give zero. Otherwise, it would destroy this relation between the symmetries and the anomalies. That's the key part of the argument. Okay, so now let me go through more detail about how we actually compute these corrections. So everything flows from a single term in 11 dimensions, the single C3 wedge 8 form in the curvatures. And this term is known from years ago. The coefficient of this term is known from years ago by studying M5 brain anomaly cancellation. It plays part of the story is due to this term. So we want to reduce this thing down to 5 dimensions in the presence of our M5 brains wrapping 4 cycles. This is the 4th cycle we consider. Okay, so we reduce this term. Second Chern class from some R squareds. A is some particular linear combination of the gauge field singled out by this particular choice of 4 cycle, R wedge R. Now we have M5 brains, we have magnetic sources for A. So A isn't really well defined here. We have magnetic sources, so we should integrate by parts. integrate by parts, A becomes F, P1, R which R becomes Lorentz Chern-Simons term. And Lorentz Chern-Simons term, of course, is not invariant under local Lorentz transformations. It shifts by a boundary term. So if we do a local Lorentz transformation of this form, the action will not be invariant, but we'll get some contribution on the ADS boundary.
What about the cubic?
Yeah, the cubic term in C, that's right. So I've already, here's my logic. So I know you've thought a lot about this. My logic is I've already determined the cubic term in C here. That's taken care of. I want to give you corrections to it. Okay? So
are you saying that's coming from the cubic, the PDD term and
No. This is coming, the way I'm getting this term is from the conformal anomaly.
Yeah.
Okay? Now getting it from, as you well know, getting this term from a Chern-Simons term and where the Chern-Simons terms come from, things like that, is a very subtle proposition.
You're just gonna ignore
the PDD. Yeah, that's right. I don't need to know.
Whatever it does, it has to end up being.
Yeah, it has to end up giving me this, that's right. Because I've computed the conformal anomaly, I know, I computed this explicitly, that's right. Computing that, to view the cubic term from the anomaly is quite tricky, surprisingly. Okay. Okay, so we have that variation in the action. There are two kinds of variations. One is if I look at local Lorentz transformations on the ADS boundary, then I'll pick up some change in the action. So trace theta d omega, theta is the transformation, d of spin connection. Now this should, I want to compare this to what I know about the transformation of a theory of a given central charge. So if we have unequal left and right central charges, then we have an anomaly under precisely this kind of transformation, under local Lorentz transformations in the one plus one dimensional space. And just from anomalies, we know this is the variation of the partition function. So I compare here and here, and that gives me the expression for the difference in the central charges. Now this is this linear term that I want. So this is again a second Chern class dotted into this the M5 brain charges. Okay, so that was transformations in the ADS. I can do the same thing for transformations on the sphere, on the S2. Transformations on the S2 are R-symmetry transformations. So this hydrodynamic term gives me a correction to the central charge of the supersymmetric side. Again, it's just a correction. I'm just looking at the variation due to this one higher derivative term. So this is a correction. I have to add that correction to the lowest order result. If I add this lowest order result, I get the exact central charges. So here's my lowest order term, and I'm adding corrections. I have these two equations here, so I can solve for C and C tilde and get these results. And these are really exact formulas for the central charge because they've been related to anomalies. They're coming from Chern-Simons terms. There aren't any other terms I can write down which would further correct these things. I mean, there's not arbitrary number of Chern-Simons terms to consider. This is really the whole story. If there were additional corrections, it would destroy the consistency of the M5 brain, essentially. It would destroy the anomaly cancellation. Okay, so we know the exact central charges, and I told you earlier that to get the entropy, we just need to know the central charges. So now, to this approximation, we have the entropy. And so let's look at an application. One application is the heterotic string. I'm trying to get a supergravity derivation of the heterotic string spectrum. So if we take our Calabi-Yau K3 cross T2, let's have some additional circle around. This is dual to the heterotic string on T6. We can take an M5 ring, wrap that W times on K3 cross S1. This is dual to the heterotic string, wrap W times on the circle. So what are the central charges? Well, use this formula for K3. Left moving central charge is 12 times the wrapping number. Right hand side, 24 times the wrapping number. What are these central charges? Well, these are precisely the central charges of the transverse matter on the heterotic string world sheet. So on the supersymmetric side, 8 bosons, 8 fermions, that's C equals 12. Bosonic side, 26 bosons, 24 transverse bosons, gives you the 24. So we have the central charge of both chiralities of the heterotic string. And So we can use Cardy's formula now, which again is just the saddle point approximation of the entropy, but let me just stick with that. And then we get these entropy of these Dabhokar-Harvey states given here. This was first observed by Keith Dabhokar. And then from the work of people in this room, and Boris and Greg and all, we know that if we go further and carry out those integrals over the potentials as Laplace transformed, that we account for all the power law corrections to the entropy. Okay, but now The new part here is that this works just as well if you put momentum in the supersymmetric side, which would break supersymmetry. So one can just as well look at a non-BPS state of the heterotic string, and in the saddle point approximation, and get this entropy from the black hole, which of course matches the microscopic degeneracy. And so, at first, you might be rather. Yeah, actually hasn't been studied. That's right. Actually has not been studied explicitly.
That's something that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's not. I'm not saying it's a hard thing, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is just near extreme.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's near extreme. It's a far from extreme in the ADS sense, but then right. To get an ADS geometry, the black hole has to be sufficiently near extreme from the asymptotically flat sense, otherwise I wouldn't have a, right. So, at first you might say this is very surprising, I'm giving all these corrections to a non-extreme black hole, but it's really not so surprising because we know, basically in any case where we understand really quantitatively black hole entropy, we can always generalize that to non-extremal situations. And it's really due to the fact that we're using an ADS3 geometry. When you go into non-extremal, the BTZ black hole, non-extremal, still locally ADS3, it's not really that big a step to get non-extremal. So one point of view is surprising, other point of view is not surprising, but I think this shows that the agreements here are not really due to supersymmetry. It's not because we're computing an index or something like that. It's, well, I'm arguing it's due to anomalies and so forth. Yes.
In
difficult
state, for example, there are no Oscar corrections in four dimensions. So you wouldn't expect to get any regression to the two-level entropy.
So what theory are you talking about?
I'm talking about how the states in medical states.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a question. Yeah, I'll have a few comments on that towards the end.
There are no Oscar corrections in the direction of the can I still use the transitional disturbance in the other dimensions to come through?
No, unfortunately, so in that n equals 8 case, there isn't a Chern-Simons term of the form I need, so there are no gravitational anomalies of the type I considered.
But then there is the propensity of the microscopic counting.
Well, I think there's not a computation that gives the microscopic counting. I don't know of a sharp discrepancy in the sense that I don't know.
You don't suffer the negative by 2 steps, so you can
tell. Right, microscopically, that's right. I don't.
It should be said that they have 0 index, so they have a large number of absolute.
Yeah.
Absolute number. So this is supposed to be compared to the.
Well, the absolute number of states. I mean, this is non-supersymmetric, so. Yeah, no, and I don't think it is a discrepancy because in that type 2 case, there isn't any geometry. Nobody's exhibited a stabilized geometry, which would be dual to that system. So I don't have any geometry to apply these arguments to. Remember, I'm sort of assuming that there is a stabilized geometry. I think it's quite likely there is no stabilized geometry.
To large black holes, small black holes?
Well, this is a small black hole. This is a small black hole.
Because, for example, I think that we had a discrepancy with small black holes in n equals 2 for the epic of 2 model. So I'm wondering how your argument seems, you don't seem to be bothered by the fact that you're working at small, fine, large, topological. So, since you're reproducing the kind of computation that we did, wouldn't you then also be.
Well, I'd like to look. I know you guys looked at a lot of examples. I haven't looked at all these examples. I'd like to look at this, the
not
CFT.
But we did find one example of a sharp discrepancy.
Sharp discrepancy, okay.
Yeah, and then people blame it on the fact that zero topological terms.
Yeah.
Large. I'm not sure. I mean, that doesn't seem to bother me.
Well, importantly using here is there's enough symmetry in my theory to relate everything back to anomalies. Now, you're talking about some. Other theory, we have
to
ask.
It's another Calabi-Yau. It's just taking that K3 times T2 and dividing it by Z2.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so should work. I mean, then I don't, yeah. But you're finding discrepancy at the, not at the saddle point part, but at the subleading terms?
Well, no. But that's where it depends on whether you're talking about second helicity super traits or the absolute absolute degeneracy. With one of those, there's a discrepancy at the leading entropy. Uh-huh. With the other, it's in the logarithmic.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, I'd be very interested to see why we have this example where it especially disagrees with the leading order. I personally don't see any escape from this result. Okay. All right, now let me just shift gears slightly towards the end of the talk here. I'm now going to discuss just some general issues of holography in the presence of gravitational anomalies and the presence of gravitational Chern-Simons terms. So this is now not the direct relation to string theory here is sort of being pushed aside. I just want to look at general theories. So let me look at some theory of gravity with negative cosmological constant, giving ADS, this action. Now, in this kind of a theory, the metric admits this Fefferman-Graham expansion. That's what it means for a metric to be asymptotic to ADS. So some, this is the metric on the conformal metric on the boundary, and then there's some power series expansion in e to the 2 eta. Now, in a theory like this, you define the boundary stress tensor as the on-shell variation of the action with respect to the conformal boundary metric. So vary the on-shell action, and that term in front there is your energy momentum tensor. I'm now going to talk about three dimensions. This is the case I'm interested in. Three dimensions, you can then get an explicit formula for the stress tensor in terms of the subleading parts of the expansion of the metric. Here it is. This indices are being raised and lowered with respect to the G0 metric. And an action like this, the stress tensor is conserved. That follows from diffeomorphism invariance. Has a non-zero trace. It's a conformal anomaly for these people. And the central charge you derive in this way is just this Brown Hinault central charge. And you always get C equals C tilde in this theory. There is equal left and right central charges. So let's ask about adding the one non-diffeomorphism invariant term that we could add without completely destroying the consistency of the theory. That's a gravitational Chern-Simons term, as the theory has been considered long ago by Desert, Jakub, and Templeton. So I think about the trade the Christoffel symbol for one forms, and so then I have this is a three form integrating this over ADS3, arbitrary conformal beta. Look at the transformation of this under diffeomorphism. Well, this term varies by a boundary term of this form, and that's the anomaly in general coordinate transformations. Or we could write down a Chern-Simons term like this in terms of the spin connection. In that case, we'd preserve the general coordinate invariance for the violated local Lorentz transformations. You could shift back and forth. These two anomalies are equivalent. That's been known for a long time. So since we now have a non-diffeomorphism invariant action, the stress tensor is non-conserved, and one can work on explicit. So there should be a beta multiplying this from up there. That's the explicit formula for the non-conservation of the stress tensor. And again, we know that think about this from CFT point of view, that anomaly is related to C minus C tilde. And so you can relate the coefficient beta in front of the Chern-Simons term to the shifts in the central charges. And we get, you know, a shift of a plus sign on one side, a minus sign on the other side, simply because this extra term we added in is odd under parity. So equal shifts on the opposite side left and right. Okay, so then we can work out the general stress tensor for these theories. So the stress tensor will be some lowest order term. Here's the extra contribution from this Chern-Simons term. And there's some remaining semi-complicated term here, which depends on the conformal metric on the boundary, but nothing else. So this is like some sort of background constant, which isn't particularly illuminating. Anyway, so one can work out this general stress tensor.
But the stress tensor of CFT is conserved?
Is not conserved because, so what I'm trying to do is describe holography. ADS theories, which would be dual to CFTs, where C is not equal to C tilde. And so if C is not equal to C tilde, then the stress tensor is not conserved. And you cannot couple the theory to dynamical gravity. Yeah, so I want to give the bulk version of that statement. Okay, so it's kind of fun to apply this thing to the standard solutions, BTZ solutions, and see what this higher derivative term does to the solutions. Well, that the equations of motion following from that Chern-Simons term vanish anytime you have local ADS3 geometry. So BTZ solution is locally ADS3. Therefore, if I take the ordinary BTZ solution labeled by some parameters little m, little j, that geometry is uncorrected. No, it's like curvature is covariantly constant.
From that gravitational
yeah, that's right. if the curvature of the compartment constant, then it gives no contribution. Okay, but there was a shift, so the geometry is uncorrected, but the stress tensor was corrected, so there's a shift then in the physical mass and angular momentum. There's this sort of mixing between M and J parameters of this form. So for example, one particular case of a BTZ solution is just global ADS. So if you take BTZ with a negative mass and no angular momentum, that's just global ADS3. So there's no shift in the mass of global ADS3, it still has this form, but there's now a non-zero angular momentum from this term. So global ADS3 with that term is an angular momentum 4 pi beta. What does that mean? Well, from the CFT point of view, it's simple. This is C minus C tilde over 24. This is just the mismatch between the 0-point energies of the left movers and the right movers. So it's like some Casimir momentum going along the boundary, which from the black hole point of view is angular momentum. Okay, then everything I said about driving the Cardy formula follows in this theory. So entropy of these BTZ black holes is given by Cardy formula, again with these weights related to the mass and angular momentum. And just for amusement, there's one kind of fun example we can look at. So I have these formulas for the central charge. Suppose I take beta such that C tilde becomes zero. So choose beta to be C naught over 48 pi. Then C tilde is zero, here's C. So this term vanishes, I only have this term. But I can look at an extremal black hole in this theory. An extremal black hole would have ML minus J equals zero. In other words, H left equals zero, so then both terms vanish. But the fact that I have a knot can do this with a non-zero M and L, M and J, means that I can have a black hole with a non-zero horizon area, but vanishing entropy. Okay, I don't know what this is good for, but it's kind of interesting. Okay, to my conclusions. Conclusions are, well, two conclusions. One is that symmetries and anomalies are extremely powerful in determining black hole entropy, including corrections. Okay, but I've only gone so far, so they're very powerful when it comes to these local corrections, local terms in the supergravity action. But we definitely need a much better understanding of non-perturbative effects, instantons and so forth, which are related to the exponentially small terms in the entropy. I haven't yet had anything to say about such things. And, well, the puzzle in this whole subject is, if you look at the case which should have been the simplest, it turns out to be the most confusing. Instead of talking about heterotic strings, suppose I just talked about type 2 strings. Just type 2 string, fundamental type 2 string on a circle, a torus. That certainly has a microscopic degeneracy, which is easily computed. And can we work out the black hole entropy dual to that situation? And so far the answer is no. And the reason why, I think, remains to be understood. From this point of view, I can say two things. One is that the gravitational anomaly in the system vanishes. So there's definitely something very different that happens from my point of view for this system. There isn't a gravitational anomaly, so I don't get any information from there. And sometimes in the literature, one reads statements that maybe if you take r to the fourth corrections and so forth. Well, so what's known in this theory is if you just take the r squared corrections, there isn't a stabilized black hole geometry. So, but there is this microscopic degeneracy, so people say maybe if you add in the r to the fourth terms and so on, that will give a stabilized geometry. Now, if there are corrections that stabilize the geometry, they should be alpha prime corrections in this type 2 picture. But one can actually work out the exact space-time central charge, including all alpha prime corrections, by doing string theory in ADS3 with NS background, and you can get a stabilized geometry if you take that, well, either heterotic string or type 2 string, add in some NS5 brains, includes Klein monopoles. That gives you a finite size geometry. And then you can ask, okay, what if I set the number of NS5 brains, includes Klein monopoles, to zero, just leaving the fundamental string charge? Am I left with some residual central charge? Well, in the case of the heterotic case, so you get some C0s that are given by this combination of the five brains, includes Kleins, you set that to zero. And you're net left with this nice residual 12 and 24, just what you want for the central charge on the heterotic world sheet. In type 2, however, the exact alpha prime analysis gives no corrections. So you set because of zero, you get zero central charge. So I'm not quite sure what to read from this. My interpretation is there may just be no stabilized geometry dual to these type 2 strings. So if there is a stabilized geometry, it's a very different form than in the heterotic case. So something dramatically has to change. But I think this is, in many ways, the most interesting question in this subject. Okay, that's it.
Could you explain again maybe why the, if you want only to get the 1 over 5-0 terms, it's sufficient to keep only the local conditions?
Right. Yeah, okay, so so remember, 5-0 is another name for tau. And 1 over 5-0 is the dependence on the black hole side, so that's like 1 over tau. And I was getting the black hole by modular transformation. So before the modular transformation, I just want things proportional to tau. And so in that geometry, before the modular transformation, this is just thermal ADS. And tau is essentially the duration of Euclidean time. So terms proportional to tau are extensive. So all the extensive terms are given by the local part of the Lagrangian. And everything else is, you know, stuff winding around tau, the non-local stuff. So to get tau dependence, I just need the extensive part of the action, just all the local part of the Lagrangian. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's right. I have to suppress anything that can wind around. I have to suppress that. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's right. So there are two easy part of the story to understand from this point of view is that local stuff, 5-0 small, instantons, winding, some of the geometry. That's probably not determined by these general principles of anomalies and symmetries.
Yeah.